Yeah, but on what is it inscribed? On copper plate or is it just in is a paper? Paper is it? Printed paper?
No, it's a book. It's a book. But the yantra involves a lot of yantra in the book. It's a study of all different types of yantra, mm-hmm. Hindu yantra, Amra, no mandara.
Hmm?
No mandara at all.
Mm-hmm.
Mani is a study of Hindu yantra. The first one which has been published.
What do you say? Do you have it in Sanskrit? You said you have it in Sanskrit too?
I have it in Sanskrit, yes. The puja.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The puja is in Sanskrit.
And so, to what will you do the puja?
To the yantra.
And what is the yantra made of?
The yantra itself is...
Draw it on the...
You draw the yantra yourself.
Good.
When you do it, it's only a profane type of symbol.
Good.
And then it becomes sacred
good.
through the puja. And then and then when the thing is at the visarjana part, then it becomes again a profane, just a piece of paper or a design.
Mm.
Symbol which corresponds to a certain degree of awareness through which psychic force can be expanded or controlled. The yantra is not concerned with really awareness in itself, but an expansion of psychic force which later on.
It's the same thing. It is the same thing.
Later on brings about a certain awareness.
It is the same thing, inner to whom or outer to whom, same problem.
It is the same thing, you know, but Yantra is intuitively known. You can't discriminate on awareness.
Intuition itself does not function as long as it is blocked by the ego.
Right, but you see, true. But what you're trying to do is not to consider the ego, but really allow that energy to flow.
Same thing.
Which is the same thing, mm-hmm. But it is a different approach. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry to complicate your life.
No. There's no complication.
But I've been interested all these years.
Any questions? When must you leave?
7:13.
7:15. I'll be grateful if you can make some arrangement that I can sit and talk there.
That shouldn't
take. There must be a chair or something.
Okay.
we sat and talked, and we're on the panel discussion. It's very informal.
Even if it is formal, I'd like to sit down. Come in, both of you. What have you to say? You see, the funny thing, she is saying all sorts of things within herself. But doesn't want to say it aloud.
I was just thinking how I'm just getting used to the feeling of being back here. And so it's nice, but I'm just landing.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
There are two things. One may have a favorite, and in order to find out what the favorite is, one has to go through the whole scripture first. Not just pick up one passage at random, and you say, this is my favorite. Or you hear it quoted by somebody and make it your favorite. Then you have shut out quite a big chunk of the same scripture. And maybe in other places the same scripture has redefined some of the concepts in this quotation. For instance, the famous St. Paul's epistle on love. If I am a prophet and I don't have love, I am nothing, that sort of thing. And now, having read that, you don't know what he means by love. And you go on, jump onto somebody else's neck and say, St. Paul said, I must love you. Maybe that's not right. Maybe he has defined his terms elsewhere, in another part of the same scripture. And maybe if you had read that, this would make quite a different sense to you. In the Bhagavad Gita, there are a number of ideas which are either repeated or contradicted in some other place. For instance, in chapter 2, there is an almost round condemnation of scripture. Traigunya Vishaya Veda and Istraigunya Bhavarjuna. These Vedas, these are merely worldly scriptures, almost. Must rise above them. Ah, that's nice. Why is it nice? Because I don't want to study any scripture. Then you go on, towards the end of the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Ye Shastra Vidimitrutya Vartate Kamakartaha Nasa Siddhima Vapnoti Nasukham Paramgatim. He who rejects the scriptures and does what he wants to do doesn't attain any siddhi. Gets nowhere. When these two are read together, a different meaning emerges. That's quite different. So, one must study the scripture from cover to cover. Then there are two roads. One, you can have your own favorite passage. And the passage should not only become your favorite, but you should become the favorite of that passage. Mm-hmm. That is, in other words, it must live in you. That's very good. That's marvelous. Well, then one verse in the Bhagavad Gita would do. The other path is when you want to learn the whole scripture thoroughly, either you want to become a teacher or fully conversant with the scriptures, there's no harm. That's possible. In order to find the favorite, you must study the whole scripture, read the whole scripture, right through. Without doing that, merely to pick up a couple of quotations from a book of quotations, and you keep on repeating the same passage over and over again and making it appear as though that you are a scholar, that's a dangerous thing. I've seen this in the case, both in the case of in the case of all religious people.
Using it as a club to bash someone.
That's all. You go to a Christian, he will quote this, I am the way, the truth, no one comes to the Father but through me. Yeah, that's it. That's it. So that is the most important thing. This is the most important. And you go to a Jewish gathering, all that they will quote is that thou shalt not have a graven image. There are other things. You go to an Arya Samaj crowd in India, there are the Hindu Jews. They also. All that they would talk about is that these pictures are no good. Idol worship is horrible. Must be destroyed. And that is what our Veda teaches us. That is what Swami Dayananda teaches us. There is a lot more in those teachings. Why don't you study them? No. This is all we are interested in. Yeah, that is the precise reason why they don't compel you to participate in anything. It's like a supermarket. Everything is there, displayed. Rituals are there, library is there, and yoga classes are there, Yoga Vedanta Academy is there.
But they must be there for a reason.
They are all there for to satisfy the needs of certain people. They need it. You may not need it, don't bother. When I go to the supermarket, I pick up what I want and walk out. I don't quarrel with the manager. Why do you keep all these things here? Other people need those things. You may want to go to the university, but that does not mean that the primary school must be abolished. Nursery school must go. They are meant for other people, people who need those things. It is not possible, however much you may try to uniformalize spiritual practice. It is not possible. It is not possible that all people will be of the same mind. It's impossible. It's not possible all people will respond to a certain approach. It's not possible. Some will like Iyengar's approach, some will like Deshikachar's approach, and some would like something else. And there is not one method, and one and only method, which can take all people to the same goal. People have tried this. Every new religious movement has called itself universal. Now there are about a dozen universal religions. And more universal churches. It doesn't work. And they are all hoping that one day the truth that I am the true church will be vindicated. In the meantime, their own organization is splitting up. This is the tragedy. So it will never happen. You establish the one universal church within, I think we decided in another conversation, within 3 days, your own two disciples will split and form two different churches. I am not sure whether they would wait till you die, but it may even happen in your own lifetime. They would split. And there will be two. It doesn't matter what your teachings are. And they would both say that ours is the pure teaching. Undiluted. And one might say this is the undiluted teaching. And the other might say that the undiluted is indigestible, and therefore the diluted thing that is healthier. It's not possible. Human, and this I am saying, even if your motivation is not other than spiritual, there are other considerations. For instance, you build a big ashram, and don't give me a prominent place in it. I don't like you and go and start something else on the other side of the road. This is another business. I may even call it by your name. But I am starting it not because of any doctrinal difference, but because I don't have a prominent place here. This is another thing. Money. Fame and other considerations also can play a part in this. But even if all those considerations were not there, all people will not share the same ideal in the same form.
Same really, no two people could ever share.
No two people.
They wanted to.
No. You have millions of forms. Unity is possible, but uniformity is not possible. We are all human beings, hopefully. But we don't look alike. The form is very, very different. So, there is unity amongst us as human beings, but there is no uniformity.
But there must be tolerance.
Pardon?
There must be tolerance.
Well, I don't like that word, but that's precisely what I am suggesting. It's not so much tolerance as understanding. My objection to that word, sir, is that it sounds a bit arrogant to me, to my ears. Tolerance. That in that is implied the feeling that I am right, you are wrong, and I am superior and you are inferior. I am doing what is right, you are not doing what is right. You may not be doing what is wrong, but you are not doing exactly what is right. And, well, I tolerate you. To me, it's much better than intolerance. But tolerance is still intolerable to me. Understanding is what we are after. Understanding, in the literal sense of the word, understanding. Standing under. If I stand under, even a baby is taller than me. Even a little boy is taller than me. And I have to look up to him. So, can I understand a person holding another belief, another faith, another concept, another view, and look up to him and appreciate what he does, what he says, what he thinks? Appreciate in the economic sense of the word. Appreciate in the economic sense of the word. That is, make it larger than it looks. Add a lot of inflation to it. That is appreciation. The value appreciates. So, can I look up to that little boy and appreciate his ideas? Not just tolerate. Understand, stand under him, and appreciate. Feel as he does, if possible, and he's great. That boy who say, little boy who says that this flower vase is God, is so full of that idea. That if only I could understand him, stand under him and look up to him, I can appreciate it.
I'm just slightly puzzled. To understand, one needs to know all the other teachings fully.
If you can, that will be marvelous, sir. But if you cannot learn all the other teachings fully, is it not possible for you at least to come to this understanding that just as I have a point of view, just as I have an idea of the truth, the other person also has a point of view and an idea of the truth? That's enough. And that idea, that point of view are as true as my idea and my point of view, exactly as true. May not be more, may not be less. And then once one is saturated with this understanding, then the next step is very simple. And it arises, and it is taken, or this realization arises without much difficulty at all. And the next step is that that which entertains this idea in me is the same as what entertains the other idea in him. And that is consciousness. And in that consciousness we are one. Only in that consciousness we are one. And in that consciousness there is no my school of philosophy, your school of philosophy. All these belong to one. But that is not for the mind to think about, conceptualize. That's all that seems to be, but not at this stage. One must get there.
Because even when you're talking, you're already trying to
vocalize it, verbalize it,
yeah.
Right? Put it into words, and that is already form. Words are also forms, yes? Not only these pictures and statues and so on, words are also forms. And even when you say, use the word God, there is a form. When you use the word consciousness, there is a form. It immediately conjures up a form in your mind. You cannot think of a word without a form arising in the mind.
And you just got past a little bit, so it's almost like you're looking at a dream. When you're in a dream, you know, like when you're looking at a dream, you're looking at that thing you're conceptualizing.
Correct, correct. Without it, it's not possible to conceptualize.
And
it's not possible to think.
And it's amazing because when you are doing it, don't
it doesn't look like.
Correct.
And so, even when people say, I am meditating upon the nameless, formless being. They are seeing those words, nameless, formless. Let's take sugar, keep some water there on the table.
How do you know that they are? They might be any people. How do you know that they are meditating on the words? Are they really might be meditating on
the words? Oh yeah, there could be a few. There could be a few who are meditating upon the nameless, formless. There could be very genuine yogis, sages, and there could be people who are in a sort of unconsciousness and stoned. But otherwise, as long as the mind functions, the mind cannot function abstractly, in abstraction. It will create an image.
But that image is created, is not always created by the mind. When there is polarization within the mind of the psyche and cosmic force, then a symbol appears from within.
The same thing. The ground on which it appears is the mind.
It's not the mind who creates that symbol.
I didn't say it creates. It cannot function without a symbol. The symbol might be provided by 100 things. But the mind cannot function without a form.
I'm not sure, but an enlightened person,
Yes. The Yoga Vasishtha mentions again and again that for the sake of talking to you, the enlightened person assumes a point of view. He has no point of view at all. But in order to answer your question, he assumes a point of view. This is probably an explanation for the contradictions which may appear in the enlightened person's speech. Because your question might evoke a certain response in him, and he assumes that point of view in order to answer your question. And he asks the same question in a different formulation half an hour later, and the enlightened person gives him a very different answer. What is the thing that ensures continuity in our case? The ego, and that's not there in him. The ego is not continuous, but you and I have made it continuous by a thing called memory.
And then when we change our point of view, we have to justify it and go through.
You have to justify it, and then you remember that you had another point of view, and so even when after abandoning that point of view, you remember the person that held the point of view was yourself, which means you have not abandoned the point of view. Not clear? You have abandoned one point of view.
No, wait.
You have abandoned one point of view, and now you think you are free from it. But as long as you are clinging to this memory, you remember, I was the one who held that point of view, I have abandoned it. Which is exactly the same as I have not abandoned it.
Because all it
was is the memory. It is still there. And the I is still there. I was the one who did that. And I am the one who is doing something very different.
That'd be why you react so greatly against the other point of view that you used.
Yes, sure. Also possible. And also, which is the further danger, is that you might get back to the other point of view again. You remember it. If you don't remember it, it'll be difficult. And as he said, once you abandon that point of view, you will become a fanatic anti that point of view. A new convert is the deadliest person.
How can we listen to those ideas of that I is just another thought and read it? And sometimes it makes you stop for a moment. But
it doesn't
really
happen.
Sinks in.
Because it's coming from outside. All these ideas are coming from outside. And it is the I, the ego again, that it picks up all these ideas and plays with them. And therefore, one should look within to see if there is a continuous ego, or if it, in fact and truth, really emerges with each action, thought, word and deed. And because we are so full of thoughts, words and deeds, there seems to be a continuity. A very beautiful illustration is given in Gaudapada's commentary on the Mandukya Upanishad called Gaudapada Karika. You know what a firebrand means? A firebrand? Huh? You take usually a long Hessian rope, set fire to it at one end, and swing it. Somebody standing at a distance will see distinctly a fiery circle. But there is nothing fiery circle there. It's just one spark of fire at the end of your Hessian rope. But because it swings at such speed, it creates the illusion of a circle. In the same way, with each thought, with each verbalization of the thought, with each action, which means expression and experience, the ego arises in response. But then we are so full of these thoughts that the ego seems to be continuous. Seems to be.
What's the thing that would perceive that it wasn't continuous?
It wasn't continuous? Consciousness, pure consciousness. Which is even the reality of the ego. You don't understand? Of course not. Nor do I. It is not possible for the ego to understand that. It is like the ocean, and the ego is like a ripple. Who sees the ripple? Does the ripple see the ocean, or the ocean see the ripple? It is only the ocean that can see the ripple. That can see the ripple. But you are also right, in that you do not understand it. The consciousness may not understand the ego as a ripple, because to the consciousness there is nothing called ego. To that consciousness there is nothing called ego. To the ocean there is nothing called a wave. The wave and the ocean exist only in the spectator's eyes, in a third party's eyes. To the wave there is no ocean, to the ocean there is no wave. They are together and totally one. So, looked at then from that point of view, the ego is merely a non-existence, and it is all the time consciousness and nothing else. Hari Om Tat Sat. 7 seconds.